I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Good evening, this is Love Sport Radio, and it's time, as always, on a Friday evening at 9 p.m. where it goes off in the studio. It's absolute carnage, because with me, it's George Lampy, Dave Hart and Stan Godwin from No Lou Talking, the boys from the Millwall Fancast. How are we, guys?
Not too bad, actually, Matt. Not too bad.
Good?
All good, yeah.
Good stuff.
Ready to go.
You all right, Stan? You didn't answer that. Either.
No, I did. No, everything's hunky-dory. Hunky-dory.
Hunky-dory. First time I've heard that on this station, so continue it, Stan. I like that. Very good.
Right.
Now, speaking of hunky-dory, Millwall, hunky-dory, would you say, fellas? A draw last week against Middlesbrough. Went out in the week in the Carabao Cup at Oxford. We'll get onto the Oxford game first, but Borough, a decent result. Probably should have won.
Well, I think we should have done it. There was an extra penalty that we should have had, I think. But when you look at the game, the way it flowed, probably 1-1 was the best result.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, you talk about penalties, and listen, I was at the game on the opening day of the season, and I felt like Preston maybe should have had a couple of penalties in that one. This one, I think Middlesbrough probably had a two. There was a double handball going on there. But also, towards the end of the game, Millwall should have had a penalty for shot on taking out. I think it was Bradshaw, wasn't it? There should have been a penalty there.
Well, yeah, but that's... Yeah, I mean, this is always the trouble, isn't it? I mean, it's what the referee sees or what he thinks was... Did he take the view that it was a genuine attempt to win the ball? I mean, I struggle when I keep listening to people that keep saying, oh, there was contact. I mean, it does my head right in when I hear that.
That's because you're old, Stan. Yeah,
well, that's true, there you are. But, I mean, the point was a good result at the end of the day. Because I was wondering how we was going to get on against Middlesbrough at Borough, right? And because last season when we played them up there, it was a bit embarrassing and we sort of levelled it out. And, you know, the progress is slow, but we're going along okay.
I don't even know if the progress is slow, to be honest. I think it's been quite a good start to the season.
Yeah.
I'd say it's been really good, actually. I mean, much better than we could have hoped for. Whenever you go to Middlesbrough, if you come away with a point, you're doing pretty good. You know, even if you had some decisions go against you. And once we get VAR in the Championship, mate, we'll be laughing, won't we?
Oh, I don't know about that. You know, you can't get me on VAR again, I tell you. I can't keep talking about VAR.
No, you won't have to worry about it in the Championship for a while, will you?
No, not in the Championship, absolutely not. But you're right, yeah, with VAR, maybe those decisions would have been given. But so would the handballs.
I think the fact that we can, after the Fulham game, that we can go to Middlesbrough, get a draw, possibly should have won. I don't think we could have asked a lot more than that, could we? Because I think, as I say, if you always come away from Middlesbrough with a point, you're doing pretty good, really.
Well, they always say, win at home, draw away, promotion.
Yeah.
So on that level, you take it.
Yeah, I mean...
But we should have won, yeah.
I mean, the point of Middlesbrough, after the embarrassment in the week against Fulham, and I don't just mean because of the scoreline, any kind of result up at Middlesbrough and an half decent performance was welcomed, you know. So, you know, I that's my view. After that thing against Fulham, I thought, dear, oh dear. And you knew it could never be that bad again. And hopefully it never will.
so, something's happened that you'll never see again.
Yeah, well, I mean, speaking of Fulham, they are currently drawing 1-1 at Cardiff. You'd imagine both these teams will be right up there in that promotion chase as well. So listen, yeah, the Fulham result, not a great one, but Fulham look like they are going to be a real force in the Championship this season. But Tom Bradshaw, getting off the mark again. Well, not getting off the mark, scoring. Of course, his second goal for the club since his return from injury.
I think it was his first touch of the game, basically. Yeah. I think this boy, we waited a long time for him getting injured last season when he looked to me to be... He didn't play many games and Harris seemed to hold him back for whatever reason. But he looked really sharp when he came on. You know, Harris was bringing him on for 20 minutes, 5 minutes. But even then, he looked like he was really ready to go, and then of course he got that injury. So I think this is great to see the boy starting to score some goals, you know, early on, and I think he's going to be a real asset to us actually this season.
Do you, speaking of another asset, Matt Smith, I mean we pretty much mention him every week on this show, but I've got to say he was really effective against Middlesbrough, wasn't he? We always say that Matt Smith is very much like Matt Smith, you know what you're going to get. But he is getting in there. Probably should have scored when he was given an opportunity in a bit of a soft shot. But in terms of his aerial ability on Saturday, last Saturday, that really came to the fore, especially for the goal.
He's the man that you need in the area. With anyone that can trouble a Millwall defence, I'm going back to it last season. You know, Cooper couldn't stay with him, so he's an asset.
Yeah, and Cooper's 6'7", so if he can't stay with you, you're in trouble. Yeah.
But it will cause defences problems every game.
Yeah,
Matt Smith.
I mean, I'm pleased about Bradshaw because I think he definitely needs a good run in the side, and notwithstanding injuries or you know, and I think that if he gets that run, he'll get a certain level of consistency, and then I just think the goals will flow naturally. But that's assuming he gets decent service. But then you can say that about any forward. But I mean, I think he's a good player.
Another note from that game at Middlesbrough: naughty boy Neil Harris, a red card. He's been fined. It's come out. Obviously, he's been fined £2,000 for his misdemeanour. But an interesting one this, because he suggested that he was quite surprised at being red carded. He wanted the game to be hurrying along. It wasn't. He's basically tried to whack the ball out of someone's arm. I mean, it's no big deal, is it?
Managers just get involved like supporters do all the world over, don't they? And, it, you know, Neil gets a little bit overexcited and it's as simple as that, isn't it? You know,
and the fact he went into their technical area didn't help matters either, but I mean...
Well, I think that's the reason why, isn't it?
Right,
I imagine it was quite confrontational, or at least that's how it appeared at the time.
Well, even when he walked off, he wasn't happy, let's say.
Well, he did. I mean, he's been pretty good in all his post-match interviews so far, but you just felt there was a bit of... He was quite tense in this one, wasn't he? The way that he was speaking, you could tell that he was still a bit pent up, a bit of pent up anger in him.
Yeah, so I think that was just a manager being involved like they are, really. You know, they live in their own little bubble while the game's on, don't they? So
are we going to put it down to a technicality then?
Well, I don't know.
I think that's what we'll put it down. But there's nothing wrong with that, is there? There's not. I mean, listen, the laws are now in where managers are going to be shown yellow cards and red cards more frequently. And it's not such a bad thing. It's not a bad thing to see your manager showing a bit of passion on the sidelines. Some people say, oh, but they've got to set an example. That's not the worst example to be set, is it? Showing a bit of passion on the touchline, wanting your team to win. So, no. Quickly forgotten. A £2,000 fine. See you later. We move on. Now, that was last weekend's game in the Championship. The Carabao Cup, gents. A victory over West Brom, of course, in the opening round against the odds, away from home. And for 80 minutes at the Kazam Stadium, it seemed to be all steam ahead for the third round. Didn't work out like that.
It was a bit longer than 80 minutes, actually, wasn't it? It was
about 85.
85, sorry, 80, yes.
I was going to say 86, so there you go. But no, I mean, yes, all intents and purposes, we should have won that game. Sometimes you come back and there are little bits of luck that go against you, or, you know, bad luck, but I think that was just unfortunate. The penalties at the end, well, I'd have them all back the next day, taking penalties.
Yeah, you're being too kind.
Go on.
I mean, I was sitting there. I wasn't there, and I was sitting there on watching the result come in, and I'm thinking, because what pleased me straight away was when the first goal came up, you got the guy that we signed from Reading scored, and I thought, oh, that's good.
Daddy Bob Varson.
Yeah, and then he scored the second one, and I thought, oh, lovely jubbly, yeah. And then I'm sitting there, and it's 80 minutes, and I thought, right, not long now. And then the next time I see it, 87 minutes, 2-1. I thought, oh, here we go. And then the next thing I then knew, it was a penalty. Now, my I know I might sound like a broken record at times, but I have a real problem, right, is that, you know, I hark back to last season, right? We'd go into a game, like when we played Middlesbrough, the opening game of the season, we're 2-0 up with 5 minutes to go and we end up drawing. We're playing Norwich a few weeks later, we're 3-2 up with about 4 minutes to go and we end up losing 4-3, right? And my problem is, when we get to 2-0, right, when you've got 10 minutes to go, we struggle to kill the game off. And I can't get my head around that. Why is it a problem that we can't seem to kill the game off? And that's the problem. And until we solve that problem, I mean, for example, I mean, we've played, you play against teams like, for example, if you'd have been Middlesbrough last week, for example, if Middlesbrough had been 2-0 up with 10 minutes to go, it'd have either been 2-0 or 3-0 or might have got 2-1, but there was no way they'd have conceded two goals because they know how to close the game down. Now, we seem to have a problem with that. And I think that part of the reason last season, along with the fact that we couldn't keep the football, that we ended up in the position that we ended up in. Mm. And if we keep giving the ball away, you know, the old saying goes, doesn't it? If you control the football, you control the match. And we don't seem to be able to learn that.
There you go. See, that's the passion we're talking about. That's the Neil Harris passion.
Did you notice
we want.
He went, when it got to 2-1, I went, oh, no, here we go. That's years and years of following the Lions,
yeah,
Matt.
Yeah, because you just sit there. Didn't you? I mean, you know, I think, but it does. It really bugs me. You just sit and you think, too. Anybody else?
Yeah, and you're right. Yeah, and it isn't one of those things, I have to say, that when you're 2-0 up away from home in the Carabao Cup against the lower league opposition as well, you should absolutely see that game off. And I know that Neil Harris tinkered and he brought some players in, and we saw Jason Malumbi again come into the starting lineup. But naivety as well from McCarthy for the penalty. Just a bit naive, last minute of the game. Or in injury time even.
Well, I've got no problem with him changing the players, because in fairness...
No, of course.
Because to be fair, all them players are going to be in and around the first team squad all this season. I mean, we turn up tomorrow against Hull, and it could well be that Malombi and the one you mentioned, it could be on the bench. Or they could play, and it wouldn't surprise anybody. It's not like with some clubs. They play these players, don't they? These young players, or whatever it is. And then they only play while they're in the cup. Once they get bombed out of the cup, you never hear of them no more. Now, to be fair, that's never the case at Millwall. It's never been the case under a lot of managers.
But Varson, however, a positive from this is that he did get off the mark, a brace. Could have probably got a hat-trick.
He should have had three. Mm. He missed a sitter.
I thought his goals were really good quality, actually. I thought he showed good footwork with the first one. And, you know, I think the way he held it up, he dribbled a bit and then he placed it into a really... And the header was something that we haven't seen a lot of. I know, you know, Smith can head a ball to his dying day, bless his heart, but... You know, the way he sort of glanced it across the box, I think that's an header that we haven't seen the like of for quite some time at the Den. So I thought there was quite some positive signs there from the boy, actually.
There are positives. Ever the optimist. That's why I love you, mate. That is why I love you on this show. Right, this is the Millwall Fan Show on Love Spot Radio. We're going to be talking to Gordon Hill next.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money. But nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Love Sports.
This is the Millwall Fan Show on Love Sport. Myself, Matt Beadle, here with the guys from Nolu Talking, George, Dave and Stan. Right, we are going to speak to Gordon Hill in a second, but just before we get there, Millwall Community Trust are appealing to fans who are running in next year's London Marathon. The Trust are calling on participants to be sponsored by the Trust whilst raising funds for community activities such as education and sports coaching and development. Those that get involved will have their efforts promoted and receive official merchandise. If you want to do this for a very worthy cause, please contact Sean Daly by email. That is on sdaly@millwallcommunity.org.uk. Right now, chaps, what a time to be alive. We've got Merlin on the line. Mr. Gordon Hill, thank you very much for joining us.
That's a pleasure.
Great to have you on. Now, Gordon, since 2002 until now, briefly tell us, what's been going on for you?
I've basically been developing and building players and creating clubs, and really in an advisory role, going in there and sorting out clubs as a consultant and doing a bit of coaching for the younger generation. So, I mean, from then, right the way through, I'm now looking at opening up my own academy so that I can fulfil it with an education as well as football. So, exciting times, hopefully, ahead.
Hello, Gordon. It's George here.
Hello, George.
Hello, mate. I'm just going to take you back here a couple of years, let's just say a couple of years. We won't go too mad here. But when you came to us from Southall, was there any apprehension or, you know, going to a second-tier team like ours?
No, never. I think basically when you're a kid, especially in them days, to be offered a pro contract with a club that's in the Football League or an association, I don't think you think twice about it. And I think my years at Millwall, the few years I spent there, was like an apprenticeship regardless. And I'd just left QPR, gone to Southall for a couple of months, and then was picked up by, you know, Dave Phillips. And then, bless his heart, and then obviously everything went from there. And Benny, you know, said, OK, fine. And it was nice because you're joining such great players like, and I, you know, you know, Dougie Order was the number 11 there. And Poss had just disappeared. And I know that Brian King was getting ready to go. He'd been sold to Coventry. So the grounding was absolutely fantastic. You couldn't have got better.
In terms of memories you mentioned there, Gordon, players that you played with, great moments at the club, what sticks out for you as the fondest, or I guess the most memorable?
I think it was actually when I was just about to sign and I went to a couple of the reserve games, and the supporters there that have obviously now been ground and now they've grown up and they've become, you know, the adults of the game, so to speak, as supporters. They took to us, and I would go and watch a game with them. And then when you make your debut at Carlisle, some of the, you know, the great players that have fallen ill, Brian Clark, who unfortunately, you know, passed away, and Alfie Wood, who's got Alzheimer's. I mean, and then Harry Cripps and Barry Kitchener. You look at it and you think, wow, you cherish those moments because you don't get that type of a player in today's game. And at that level, you need those type of players to ground your younger players to what's going to be ahead of them, whether they move on to another big club or they stay at the club. I mean, I would, and I said this many times, I would never have had no problems in staying at the club and playing for 10 years or so, you know, as long as I could. You know, I had other people that I'd look at, and some of the players that you just played with just were that type of player that you could talk to. And they'd have a go at you. You'd have a go back, but it was like a family type of an affair. Millwall was a very smaller version of what I call a Man United. It had a very personal feeling when you went into it. But my grounding as a young kid then at 17, that was something that I would cherish. And I think I needed that to actually make me stand in good stead when I went to United, because the first thing they said, oh, the Flash Londoner. Well, I wasn't a Flash Londoner. I just was confident of what I could do and wanted to play. But I would have played. You know, in front of the at the Den for years to come. It wouldn't have bothered me.
Gordon, Stan here. I mean, it's...
Hello, Stan.
How are you? All right, mate. You might be interested to know, you're talking about your time at Millwall, and this morning I was watching a programme, remember that programme, The Big Match? Well, it was a thing called The Big Match Revisited today, and lo and behold, the first game on there is Millwall versus Portsmouth on the 29th of December, 74 at the Den, and you were playing in the game. But the thing that struck me, because they had Brian King on there afterwards being interviewed, and because the big problem, it was a 0-0 draw, but a lot of the problems was to do with the weather, especially the wind. I mean, he was kicking the ball up and the ball was coming back, and the other goalkeeper had the same problem as well. But anyway, I'm glad to hear. One of the things, I mean, in your time as at Millwall, you had some right jolly japes set up by various Millwall players, according to Eamon Dumfries in his book. Now, I appreciate Eamon Dumfries, not exactly your... But you're not exactly his biggest fan.
Let me say, Stan, it's not on my Christmas list.
Yeah. I remember you saying that once before. So, yeah. Although he can be a difficult character, I must admit. But anyway.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, well, yeah. But what was the sort of the funniest things they would sort of get you at it, so to speak?
There wasn't many. It was the only one about the tennis with Harry, and that he was great. You know, what stood out about Harry to everybody, and I think, you know, Kitchen was very quiet. Kitchen used to go around being himself, and he was like an enforcer, but a quiet enforcer.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you looked at, for instance, there was about three of them. There was Kingy, there was Kitch, Gordon Bolland, and then, of course, they towed along the little fella, Eamon Dumfries. So, but the biggest one, I think, was the tennis was the only one that really stood out. And after that, I think they done their testing on me to find out what I was all about. And I was just looking and thinking to myself, oh, gosh, you know, you've got to grow up very quickly here in the pro world, because it might be hard playing against teams that come from, say, Luton and the other teams outside there, but it was hard to actually settle in, because you had to be special to be accepted by them. They wouldn't accept anybody, and they didn't accept anybody, which was the way that Millwall's always been that way.
Mm.
And, you know, you're either in there or you're not in there. And for me, when that happened, it was, you know, I would chuckle to myself on the way home. And of course, the likes of Brian Clark, that would be my mentor, to speak, he'd just tell me, he'd say, I said, I was at Cardiff and I was at, this is what they do, this is what you've got to get over, they don't mean it, they want you to do well, you know. And I've had so many people after me say, do you know what, it was a pleasure to get to know you, or a pleasure to play with you, you know, not like, we don't want to be near, he's a cheat. And that's something I'd never wanted to be called. But I think with these players that we're talking about, and you're talking about players, and you know, one stands out for me was Gordon Bolland, who used to be the midfielder, and you know, he would do his job very well. And then all of a sudden you get Harry coming up, and I always remember the story when Kitchy was having his testimony and I was playing in it, and it was Kitchy's day, everything was Kitchy, and we came out and we're just about to play, and Harry came out, hands up in the air as though he just won the lottery, running around, shaking everybody's hands, and everybody said, yeah, Harry, it's Kitchy's day, not yours. Oh, he says, sorry, Kitch. And we had to, like, calm him down. And it was those type of things. And, of course, the keeper, Brian, he, you know, when he moved, when we played Coventry, he wasn't playing because he had damaged his knee, and I went round his house and we sat there talking, and we talked about, you know, the Millwall days, you know, and of course to me it wasn't the Millwall days because I'd just left, and he'd just left, so it was a, you know, I always remember he turned around and said, well, we've gone up another level, what are we going to do now, son? You know, and it was
go on. Yeah, go on. I was just going to say that you were, I guess, part of an old school trend in football where we had wingers. Mm-hmm. We had tricky, skillful, pacey wingers. And we've kind of seen that die out a little bit in football, in Millwall in particular. I mean, Jimmy Carter came through. There is sort of a return to that now a bit with Conor Mahoney, who's come in and kind of plays that role. But in terms of wingers in the game, do you think we're starting to see that return to football?
Well, I hope we are, because, you know, there's nothing finer than seeing a winger go down, take a defender on or take two defenders on, get past him, whip the ball in. I'm getting tired of seeing wingers or so-called wingers, these so-called wing-backs, which frustrate me. The game is going to change again, as it always does. The trends change, the play changes, the 4-4-2 changes, the Christmas trees come in, the Christmas trees go out. I mean, I've seen every single formation you could imagine. And there's only one formation for me. It's like when you've lost the ball, you're defending. When you win the ball, you're attacking. So that goes out the window, you know. But then if you look at the wingers that are there, there aren't wingers. I mean, the kid that they just signed at United, Davis, you know, he's a right winger. And he looks the part. He looks the piece. But I'm just trying to... I'm going to say, well... Are you going to do it on a regular basis or not just one-off? Or have you got to wait for your defender? What frustrates me is defenders can't cross their legs, let alone cross a ball. yet what they're doing is they're steaming forward and it falls down at the end. And then the four, you know, we were always taught to get down the line. Frankie Blanston, who was a great, great winger himself, said, listen, we only need one in a game for you to whip that ball in. You know, another good friend of mine, Dougie Order, who I'd just like to say, Dougie, my deep commiserations for the loss of your wife, Linda, because it saddened me when I heard that. But I know you, and I know my best wishes go with you, my friend. But a player like that, you know, that was there, that took me in, because I was after his position, and he knew that, but it wasn't sour grapes. It was like, okay, you get down the line, you whip the ball in, you look for either Woodsy or Clarkey, or you get Kitchy, or you get that. Harry came up every now and then, but it was Kitchy the one that you was really looking at when you started to pick players out. And as a winger, you don't pick out players until you're that good. You pick out the space and make sure that the guy gets on the end of it. That's the way that we were taught, and that's the way I was taught. And that's the way I always will do. And if you get to the byline, there's nothing more exciting than pulling the ball back for someone to smash in the back of the net. And I did that a few times at Millwall. And I literally loved it, because like the supporters are very, very knowledgeable when it comes to knowing what they're wanting and knowing what they're seeing. And present day now, the boys are doing great. They played, you know, half a dozen games. They've got, you know, 50% of the points. You know, Harris seems to be on the right road. It seems to be a building process now. But it's not a case of, oh, you know, it's a do or die. You have to have patience. You can't just immediately click your fingers and expect you to have a winning team. It doesn't happen.
It doesn't. Gordon Hill, thank you very much for joining us. Pleasure having you on.
Cheers, Gordon.
Absolute pleasure. Stan and George. And George, remember this, George, will you? 10 o'clock is not 1 o'clock.
Sorry, mate.
I've been sitting for 3 hours waiting for you to call me.
I'll call you and apologise about that, mate. Don't worry.
You be good, guys, and all the best for the boys at the weekend, because they've been away for a couple of weeks, so they might find the new den a little bit strange.
Gordon, thanks for joining
Cheers,
us, boss.
Mate.
That was Gordon Hill, ex-Millwall and England winger. George, you don't want to keep people waiting, George. Come on.
No, it's my fault. Down to me.
Great chat, that, fellas. Just before we move on, memories of Gordon Hill in a Millwall shirt?
I think Gordon Hill, you know, there's not many Millwall players, and there's not many players anywhere that you actually end up playing for Manchester United, certainly not in our day, and certainly not from Millwall. And I was really happy the boy went to Manchester United as the finest club, you know, they were the biggest club in the land, and he went there and he had a great career there, and in my opinion he was the greatest Millwall player I ever saw.
Lovely stuff, well put.
No, he was. I mean, he had a touch of, you know, he had a deft touch, and he was a great player. I mean, I don't quite go down the road of the finest player ever. I mean, I know my one is, but anyway. But no, he was a good player, and And when he went to Man United, and also he went on to Derby as well, we done quite well.
Yeah, to see him to believe it, really.
Yeah.
You know, it was like the ball was stuck to the end of his boot. Mm. Sometimes he just made these there amazing runs.
There ain't no
runs.
Wingers like him today, mate, I tell you.
Yeah, well, that was really interesting to hear his perspective on the modern-day winger, as it were. Definitely not the same as it was back in the day. Right, it's the Millwall Fan Show on Love Sport.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Millwall Fan Show on Love Sport. The guys from Nolu talking, George, Dave and Stan. It's that time for Legend of the Week. This has been proposed by Rose Barton of Foots Cray. And also, Love Sport's very own Jimmy Carter, I believe, as well as wade into this debate.
Blimey.
I know. I tell you what, we're going up and up on this show. Of course, we had Jimmy on the show last week. Some great stories from him. Now, Dave, Mr. Terry Hurlock is the Legend of the Week this year, this week.
This is going to be really difficult for me because legend or hero? I'll go with hero because he was a hero to me. Every team needs to have somebody with a bit of bite and a bit of football in them, and Terry Hurlock was that. You know, he'd go out there and he'd literally bite the bullet, take it, give it, and he came up with the goods at the end. It was just a pleasure to watch him.
I mean, Terry Hurlock, to an outsider, not a Millwall fan, I suppose, was known for being a certain type of player. 7 red cards in his career. He was known for being quite an aggressive midfielder. People that watched him week in, week out on the terraces at the Den, did he come across like that? Because I know we mentioned Jimmy Carter. Jimmy always used to say he would clean everything up. You knew that in Terry, you basically had a backup.
Terry Hurlock was possibly one of the hardest men in football. In fact, when he played, I think you could have put your hand on your heart and said he was the hardest player in all of the leagues at the time, you know. And that's why Millwall fans like Dave and myself, and I'm sure Stan does, we all love him with a passion. You know, he emphasised our football club in many respects. Besides the hardness of him, but there was a good footballer and all. Him and Les Brierley in the middle of our midfield were as good as any that I've seen over the years. And there was no surprise that they took us to the very top of the, you know, into League One. So, hero or legend, I'd have to say many Millwall fans would think Terry Hurlock is a legend without even blinking an eye. But to me, there are only a few people that stand on the legend shelf. And I think Hurlock would be a hero.
Okay, Stan?
Well, yeah, see, Terry Hurlock, in some respects, was probably was a victim of circumstance, or a victim of his time, would rather be, because, you know, a few years prior to that, them sort of tackles he did before, he wouldn't have even got red cards then.
No.
Right? I mean, but you look at some players today, right, and you watch them, and they go in on tackles, and you know they're going in deliberately to wipe them out. My experience... That was never my experience with Terry Hurlock as such. I mean, he used to go in to win the ball, right, and he wouldn't take no prisoners in doing that, but I don't think he ever set out to knock somebody up in the air like some of them do today. So, and because, as Jules says, for a lot of fans, I mean, Terry Hurlock is, an absolute legend. I mean, I remember when we was playing in a playoff game against Wigan some years ago, and just before the kickoff, somebody had come up with this idea to bring Terry Hurlock on and bring him out to the centre circle. Well, once he walks on that pitch, I mean, they just went berserk, you know. So to a lot of people, Terry Hurlock is a legend, you know. They would have him up there with Rhino and Harry Cripps and all these people, you know, I mean.
And he returned to the club, didn't he? I mean, he had two spells with the club. Was involved in that infamous game, wasn't he, with 3 red cards, if I remember rightly?
Well, he came back, played in one of his games for us and got sent off within about 2 minutes, didn't he?
Very first tackle, he was gone.
Like, you know. But just to sort of answer that a little bit, if we've got a stand at the Den that isn't named, and if you was to ask any of the supporters, we need to put a player's name up there, they would actually put Hurlock's up there. It still doesn't make him a legend, but that just shows you the feeling at the club and the supporters.
I mean, even when he played at when he was at Rangers, they did the supporters up there voting their player of the season.
I think he is one of those cult heroes,
isn't he?
Like you said,
no doubt about that.
And I think that's where you say the word hero is probably more applicable to Terry Hurlock because he did have that cult status. And in terms of him being a player in a side, I know you're saying that he didn't intend to go in and hurt these people and get red cards, but just to have that physical presence on the pitch makes such a difference, because there are some players of opposition teams that would think, I'm not going anywhere near him.
I mean, there was a story I heard. I don't know what the truth of it was, but the story I heard was that he had a real good chance, Terry Hurlock, of getting in the 1990 England World Cup squad. And the only player that kept... I'm not saying he was as good as him, but apparently the player that kept him out of that was Gascoigne. I'm not saying he was another Gascoigne, but what I'm saying is that's how highly he was rated. That he would have been in... If it hadn't been for Gascoigne, he'd have probably been in that squad.
I remember we played Nottingham Forest. They had Stuart Pearce in the team and they had another guy in the midfield. I forget his name, but he played for England at the time. So they were two, you know, outstanding players.
Steve Hodge, was it?
No, it wasn't him.
Des Walker.
No, I can't
remember.
Sorry,
we'll go on. Carry on.
But Hurlock marked him, and Stuart Pearce said afterwards that he just didn't touch the ball all the time because he was terrified of Hurlock, you know. So it was as simple as that, you know.
When Millwall was in the First Division and they played Liverpool up at Anfield, I mean, they had Steve McMahon. They don't come much harder than that. Mm. And McMahon knew he was in for... He didn't look forward to Hurlock. And he come off second best.
And there was a lot more to Hurlock than just being a physical player.
That's right, yeah. You know?
And that's what's important. He didn't play at the highest level, of course, for nothing. He had some ability, of course he did. Actually played in the Premier League. Not that that really means anything, because people seem to think that football started in 1992 when the Premier League did. But played in the Premier League with Southampton. Mm-hmm. Played, obviously, for Rangers when they were winning all their titles in the Scottish top flight. But Terry Hurlock, I'm going to say here a resounding agreement that he is a hero and not a legend.
Yes.
Right, Pat will be happy with that comprehensive roundup of Terry Hurlock, Legend of the Week. Right, we're going to move on now to Fan in the Dugout. Happy to say that we've got Lorna Kelly on the line. Lorna, how are you doing?
I'm okay, thank you.
Good to have you on. Now, the results against Middlesbrough, a draw and a draw against Oxford, but a 5-4 penalty shootout defeat. What are your views on those?
Against Middlesbrough, it was a good result away from home against a side who was challenging for promotion last season. I thought when Smith is winning everything, and when we brought Bradshaw on, he scored his first touch.
Yeah, that's right, Lorna. Lorna
and Oxford was a bit disappointing going out on penalties, but it was nice to see Barton getting his first goals for us, and he could so easily have got a third, but he hit the woodwork.
Mm.
It would have been interesting to meet West Ham, but now we can concentrate on the league.
Absolutely.
Lorna, it's George here. Hello.
Hello, George.
Who is making the greatest impact in the team at the moment, in your opinion?
Well, I think Conor Mahoney, because he's been our best sign, in my opinion. Right. He's brought a touch of class to our wing this season. I can't see anyone taking his place in the first 11. Unless he gets injured. Also, Matt Smith is getting better and better with each game, and his partnership with Bradshaw looks to be coming along nicely.
Lorna, tell me, who would be the first three players that you would select for the game tomorrow against Hull? I suspect I know one of them, but because you just mentioned his name. So
Mahoney.
Yeah, so who would be the other two?
For his natural skills, it's got to be Smith and Bradshaw. I think they should link up together, give him a try.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they will build a good partnership.
No, I understand that line of thought, yeah.
Yeah.
Hi, Lorna, it's Dave speaking.
Hello, love.
You all right?
Yeah. A bit nervous. Is that Dave Hart?
Yes.
Don't be nervous, Lorna. You're doing great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tomorrow's game.
Yeah.
You're going to give us a prediction for it.
2-0, Smith Bradshaw.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty good, Lorna. We're all happy with that, don't you worry.
That's very that's very comprehensive, Lorna. And just looking ahead to the rest of the season, Lorna, what are your hopes and dreams for Millwall this season?
Well, my dreams is to get to the playoff and go up, but that won't probably happen. Mm. But just to stay in this league.
Who's that laughing in the background there, Lorna?
Oh, she's a wet spam. I ignore her.
Great, Lorna.
She supports West Ham. Ignore her.
Oh, we forget about that. Absolutely.
we ain't doing too well.
Bye, Lorna. Thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Lorna.
Thanks, Lorna. Bye. Bye, Lorna.
That was Lorna Kelly, fan in the dugout. Lovely, lovely chat, that one. Right, this is the Millwall Fan Show. We're going to be looking ahead to that game against Hull next.
Love Sport.
Yep, it is time for the opposition view on Love Sport. Millwall host Hull City tomorrow, 3 p.m. at the Den. Delighted to say Jonty Coleman, digital sports writer for the Hull Daily Mail, has joined us on the line. How are you doing, Jonty? Jonty, are you there? No, we've lost Jonty for a second. I'm going to go to a quick promo, guys, because we all remember Jackie Knight. Well, she is still significantly short of her target of raising £2,000 to help the Gambian school children receive the donated Millwall shirts, boots and stationery. This money Jackie is now raising will help get the items shipped to Gambia that oh so many fans and the club donated. You can help by making a donation, no matter how big or small, openly or anonymously, to www.justgiving.com/crowdfunding/Gambian-Lions. That's justgiving.com/crowdfunding/Gambian-Lions. Right, I do believe that we've got Jonty back on the line. Jonty, are you there?
Hi mate, yeah, I'm here.
Good. great to have you on the line, Jonty. Right, Hull travel to the Den tomorrow. How's the season, in your opinion, been looking for the Tigers so far?
It's been a really interesting start to the season. Obviously, Grant McCann came in to replace Nigel Atkins, who, you know, many Hull City fans just wanted to see the back of over the summer. Grant McCann, you know, he's arrived and he's already implemented style of play early doors. It's very attacking, it's very high tempo, but at the minute, as good as the chance creation has been, actually taking those chances has been an issue. At the minute, after five league games, 4 points, three of those coming in the only home win and only win of the season against Reading, whilst we've got a draw, one or draw away. Some good results in those two, but you know, there's been chances where they really should have picked up more points, and McCann will certainly be disappointed, as well as the fans as well.
Hello, Jonty. I was just going to ask you, actually, you know, what sort of football are you actually playing at Hull at the moment?
To be fair, it hasn't been many games other than some in all competitions that have been boring, to be perfectly honest. It's very attacking, it's very aggressive, there'll be a lot of tackles going in. The chance creation, you know, it's so regular, you know, whenever they go forward, you think, oh, they might actually do something here, but it's just taking those chances that's been the issue. And obviously it was well documented how good Jared Bowen was last season, and you know, the same sort of thing aren't already this season. He's got three of their five league goals, set up one of the other two as well. So, you know, if there's one man to watch out for tomorrow, it would definitely be him. Because, you know, he started the season well again. But it's very attacking, but defensively they're very vulnerable, especially at full-back. If we get into those areas, you know, exploit full-backs tomorrow, then the Tigers could be in some real trouble again.
I was interested in you say it was quite aggressive. That might be a concern to us.
Yeah. It's just a sense that because of Cambridge, they've already been playing a line, you know, they'll get in people's face to try and win that ball back. But I think the issue is, you know, they'll put in a lot of tackles and win a lot of tackles, but at the same time they'll give away quite a few fouls. Nottingham Forest were very similar last season. It has its risk and rewards. But yeah, it will certainly be a tasty contest, nonetheless. But like I said, there's a bit of a transitional problem, I think, at the minute, where when they do go forward, they look good, but the second they lose it, because of how many men they've committed forward, leaving that back line so exposed, and ultimately it's been their downfall. Against Bristol City last weekend, it was kind of highlighted, really, Hull City had most of the chances. But Bristol City didn't need many chances to take. They scored two in 2 minutes in the second half, which ultimately killed the game off. Both, you know, one copy of the other, where they're just sprinting down the right, crossing the box, and it's come at the end of that. So yeah, it's going to be entertaining nonetheless, I think.
Yeah, Johnny, Stanley, I'm listening very carefully to what you're saying about your, you could say, fragile defensive cover. And, I mean, if what you're saying is correct, and I've got no reason to doubt you, I mean, from my point of view, I mean, given that's the case, I mean, some of our guys might do some real broken field running down the flanks. And, as you know, we've got Matt Smith in the middle, and he would be the ideal person, subject to decent deliveries, that could cause your people some problems.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point you highlight. I think if you do get down those wide areas, you get a box, get it into the box. It's so well documented how good Matt Smith is in the air. You know, he hasn't taken long to show that at Millwall. So, you know, and I doubt that he'll, you know, if he gets the right service tomorrow, it shouldn't be a problem. And one thing that they do have, he's missed the last couple of games, and I think it's been noticed. They've been alternating between playing Robbie McKenzie and Leonardo Silva Lopez at right back. And Lopez has done a bit of a job, but he's not a right back, he's a midfielder. Whereas, you know, Lehigh's experienced mix for himself, you know, he caps from America's team, was at Aston Villa for a while and Nottingham Forest. So, you know, he's a very established player at this level. But, you know, it doesn't, regardless of how good he is, it still doesn't change the fact that at full-back especially, they're just being less so exposed. It's not necessarily the full-back's fault. It's just the way that McCann set up. You know, like I said, it's very risky. And yes, it does come off as rewarding, and also it can be their downfall at the same time.
John T, before you go, quick score prediction from you?
It's a tough one, I think. You know, it's quite easy to go to Millwall and think, you know, oh, it's Millwall at a weekend. We all know what they can do against the big teams. Never mind, you know, the teams that are struggling, like Hull City are at the minute. I'm going to sit on the fence and go 1-1, but I can, you know, it's, again, Millwall's really not a tough place. It really is a tough place to go. Hull City are struggling for form. And yeah, Millwall will start the season much better.
Nice one. John T, thank you very much for joining us. That was John T. Coleman, digital sports writer for the Hull Daily Mail. Well, he thinks it's probably going to be a bit of a cagey affair, like you say, Stan, if Millwall can exploit Hull's defensive weaknesses, might get a result.
Johnny's brought a smile on my face, actually, telling me that his defence is a little bit fragile. I think if we play Smith, they're going to be in all sorts of trouble. We've got Jed Wallace back, hopefully, tomorrow. I think we're going to turn them over about 3-1.
Blimey, George, blimey.
There you go.
That's exotic for you, isn't it?
Well, do you know what? It's funny because Millwall haven't scored more than once in any of their last 12 league games. So whenever we do these predictions and it's I reckon we might do a 3-1 or a 2-1, it has been solitary goals for Millwall in the last 12.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I mean, just sort of slipping back to the debacle against Fulham, but I mean, the guy did say before on the commentary that up until that game, this season, Millwall had the least attempts on goal than any other team in the Championship at that point.
And actually have completed, as things stand, completed fewer passes than anyone else in the Championship. Nice. And possession stats as well. Nice. And I know that we can't always pay attention to some of these stats, but those two in particular, in terms of passes and possession, Millwall at the bottom of that table.
That's right. And at the end of the day, and if you don't get on top side, you don't get top side of that, at the end of the day, it's going to come back to haunt you big time.
Kamil Grzycki, I think, is a decent player that often causes problems for opposition. He's been involved in the most shots this season so far in the Championship, either shooting himself or assisting someone to shoot. So he's dangerous. Jonty mentioned Jared Bowen as well up top there. They've got some decent players in attack, haven't they?
Yeah, they've got good players in attack, but I think our defence has looked pretty solid. I mean, the Sheffield Wednesday game proved that. You know, for a full half of 10 men. And it's not what you do. You can have the ball for 95% of the game. It's what you do with it. So if Millwall go for 5% and get a goal and we win 1-0, you take it every day of the week. But, play Bradshaw with Smith, I think, to start.
OK, and a score prediction from you?
For me, I'll go 2-0.
2-0? Yeah, Stan?
Yeah, I'd go 2-0.
Yeah? So we've got 2-0, 2-0, 3-1. There we go. Bit of optimism, bit of liveliness. Come on, fellas. We're back at the Den. We're going to be drinking our Husky chocolate. It is all good on a Friday night. Right, that is the Millwall Fan Show for another week. We'll be back, myself, Matt Beadle, and the guys from No Loo Talking next Friday at 9 p.m. We'll see you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose Masterforce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from Masterforce today. Check out all our Masterforce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.